Hello, folks. How you doing? Feeling all right? I am David Ellenbogen here. Very exciting weekend. Was up in Hudson, New York with the Brooklyn Raga Massive, playing a show, sold-out show at the Hudson Hall at the historic Hudson Opera House. Really amazing experience. Bouncing around. Nice hit in Saugerties as well for blissful bedrooms. Anyway, came back to New York City to meet up with Hans Taparia and broadcast a show on WKCR featuring a brand new series, the Outside India series, which is premiering this Friday coming up, September 8th, I believe. And that's going to open a free show at Lincoln Center with Amir El-Safar with the Brooklyn Raga Massive. Also later in the series is Roman Diaz, Raga Cubana, Martha Redbone, and Awa Sango. It's going to be awesome. All the shows are free, but you'll have to go early. You're going to go early to get your, make sure you get in. They're all at Lincoln Center's David Rubenstein Atrium. Anyway, I'll switch to the broadcast. From yesterday, WKCR. I was started off with a conversation with Amir El-Safar, previously recorded, where I was asking him about the differences between Raga and Makam, and then we'll be back with Hans Taparia and hear selections from all those amazing artists. All right, thanks for listening. Oh, and this episode, like all others, is sponsored by the Rubin Museum of Art. You will hear me pumping and pumping throughout the radio show because tickets, pre-sale tickets, just when became available at Indiegogo for the Ragas Live Festival, October 21st. Get your tickets. It's going to be unbelievable. So, yeah. And come earlier. Come for a Friday DJ night. I'll be there. And more to come. All right. Thanks, y'all. Take care. Enjoy. I always thought that makams are basically the equivalent of a raga, you know, a scale that is very specific and gives a particular feeling. But then I'm looking at your liner notes here, and it says that there is a makam called something like Mukhalif, said to be the gasping sigh of the survivors after the fall of Baghdad in 1258. So is that usual to have be so specific with the makams that they're that?
Well, you touch on a really good point, and it's a very good question, because in Iraq, makam is a little bit more specific than sort of the general Arab Turkish sense, where sort of what you said, like it's a scale, maybe it's a little bit more than a scale. I mean, even the raga, it's like, you know, it's a mode which has certain type of phrasing and expected things and surprise and etc. In Egypt or in Syria or in even Moroccan music and like the classical traditions, and then in Turkish music especially, when you say like makam sabah or siga or rust, all these makams, they are more or less a mode with sort of characteristic phrasing, and then you can do an improvisation in a makam, or you can write a various types of forms. It'd almost be like saying symphony in C major. You'd say like semai in makam rast, you know, or longa, which is another form, in makam bayati, etc. In Iraq, the makam is actually a composition in the sense that it has a structure, it has a beginning, a middle, end, And there's varying degrees of flexibility. Some of the maqams are incredibly specific, and some give you choices. You have like a set of choices of when you want. You can go to this melody or that melody. But unlike a sort of normal composition, the way I would think of compositions, they're heavily improvised. So there's a lot of areas in which the singer or instrumentalist is free to do variations and maybe repeat phrases or take little segments of a phrase and explore them, and that's where the innovation comes in. But it's within this set kind of confine of a composition. It's very it became so stimulating to me as a jazz musician, and coming from classical music as well, Western classical music, when I got into the maqam, is like this notion of improvisation versus composition, because it was like so specific, and yet very like I'd listen to 10 different recordings and hear 10 wildly different interpretations. So to get back to your question about maqam mukhalif, several of the maqams have stories behind them relating to Iraqi history or general regional history and stuff. And that particular maqam has mukhalif is a very kind of heavy, sad, forlorn, or what's a good word? It's just a destitute sort of feeling. And it is said to originate from when Baghdad was sacked in 1258, and that's kind of when the glorious age of this great city ended.
You know, I guess speaking of being sacked, so you arrived there before the U.S.'s second invasion. What kind of city? What did you see? Was it like what kind of, you know, is it was because I don't even really have a picture. You know, was it like a kind of Did it feel like a like the way Western cities do, you know, where people wearing modern dress and they're, you know, and business is kind of booming or chugging along? I mean, like, what was...
Yeah, it's sort of a mix. It was a mix, and it was, I mean, in general, like, Arab cities, they have this sort of... different strata of society, and there's a certain bourgeois class and people that are very westernized and western educated and sort of maybe learned and are we okay with that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's sort of, there's a certain class of people that and then there's the more traditional class where people, you know, still wear the galabia or the dishdasha, the sort of long robes, and the women are dressed, not only covered, but wearing this something called the abaya, which is a large sort of cloak. So there's kind of different parts of society. My family in general were sort of, you know, they're middle class. They would wear Western clothes when they go out, and maybe at home they'd wear, just to be more comfortable, wear sort of more traditional garb. But you know, all the amenities and stuff, running water, and I mean, all of that, of course, are there, were in place. But it was a very tricky time because it was 12 years of sanctions that had kind of decimated the economy, and the infrastructure was really barely functional. It was like everything was working. You know, you walk into a department store, let's say, and a quarter of the light bulbs are on. Most of them are empty sockets, and then the shelves are kind of half full and not exactly, you know, it's sort of like people just kind of finding a way to survive, you know, and a way to cope. And by that point, I mean, they pretty much were, you know, there was the oil for food program, and people were sort of, they're making do, you know, like they're getting along sort of okay. It wasn't a boom. I mean, they had the memory of the 1980s and 70s when Baghdad was such a rich city. I mean, Iraq was an incredibly rich country that oil money was really going into services, and, you know, the city was just kind of booming, and they had, at that point, they had everything we had in the States, TVs and VCRs and whatever technology. I mean, there was, the Iraqi dinar was worth $3. It was stronger than the U.S. dollar, and now, and then after 91, it went to 2,000 dinars equals $1, so just completely destroyed, and so people who had these bank accounts with someone had like 100,000 dinars, it went from being worth $300,000 to being worth what? What's 150? I can't do the math. $50? Yeah, right.
Wow.
Yeah, but that was normal. I mean, it just happened.
It happened to everybody
across the board. Yeah, and then there was sanctions. So. Certain
and things. Then there was things like shits.
Yeah. Well, it was all, yeah. One was related to the other, but yeah. But yeah, people were surviving. They were oppressed and down about it, but they were sort of excited about the U.S. coming to invade, because it was sort of a relief. Like, okay, anything, just we want to break out of this isolation, you know. Because, I mean, there was no real communication. Satellite TV was illegal. Internet was barely, you know, people didn't really have connection. They were just starving for some kind of, you know, when I remember I'd sit and watch the news, and somebody would come from Europe, like a someone supporting the Iraqi cause or whatever, and it would be like an alien landed from another planet. It was something, like, remarkable. Like, who's this, you know? Like, so I imagine people probably saw me that way, too. So.
Yeah, I was just going to ask. Yeah, people must have been... kind of asking you a lot of questions, and like, you know, they're curious.
Yeah, and that's eventually why I kind of had to leave, because it was people asking my relatives questions too, like, who's this half Iraqi, half American cousin of yours that's coming to study Arabic and study music? Like, you know, there's a war that's about to start here. What, like, it was very implausible. And music doesn't have a role in society now where people, like, you know, you're going to travel across the world and live in a, you know, it just didn't, people don't see music as that.
So people were wondering if you were some kind of spook.
I think that's what, yeah, that was sort of what my cousins implied, and they were getting nervous. And that was the end of 2002, and I pretty much booked my taxi, and I think I left 2 or 3 days after that. And once I knew that it was making them uncomfortable, I was like, okay.
Right.
It's it's over. And then 2 months, 2.5 months later is when the first bombs started pummeling the place. So, yeah. I wasn't there for that, though. So.
And then intense. It's an intense history, and it's an intense... I feel that one of the really amazing things about music is how it takes you all around these places, and it brings me and you to this conversation. It brings the listeners to hearing about these things. It brought you to Iraq, and it cuts through. I mean, I was, wow, what an experience. And obviously, I mean, the result of this, it seems to be all over your music, right? I mean,
it's album, a part of it, yeah.
It's an album called Crisis. It's got album, tracks called Fly Over Iraq. And The Great Dictator, which I assume is a reference to the incredible movie.
Well, title came certainly from the Chaplin film. But the reference was also, I mean, take your pick, which dictator you want to talk about. But there's sort of common themes that seem to recur in our history. So, especially the Arab region in the last, sort of the modern Arab state was kind of founded on these strong despotic rule, whether it was Saddam or whether it was like the kind of military rule in Egypt that temporarily suspended, well, never really suspended, but during that, the overthrow of Mubarak. And then I was living in Egypt also shortly before writing this music in 2013. And so I was sort of, seeing this overthrow and this kind of in between this, like the Muslim Brotherhood was happening, was running the show sort of at that time. And people were fed up, and like the same people who just worked so hard to depose a ruler of 35 years were now trying to depose this new president that they weren't happy with. And it's like, well, what's next? And then, okay, well, back to square one. Let's go back to the military rule and just another person, but more or less the same stuff. And then people are sort of happy, seemingly. And you don't really know what that means exactly. And it's tough. I mean, there's a track also, the Great Dictator, and then the next track is called The People. And in neither case am I trying to say, oh, the dictator's bad and the people are right. And it's just because the people sometimes want, I don't know, we don't really know what's best for us sometimes. Not that dictators are the solution or their problem in so many ways, but then you look at okay, Iraq was it was a horrible place. Saddam was awful. And I mean, I have a cousin, my uncle was executed during Saddam's time and for just speaking his mind. And
at home.
Yeah, someone recorded him and took him. And he was a 4-star army general, retired. And so, I mean, this was the fate of anybody who, it was known, it was common, disappearances, random searches, whatever. I mean, anything could happen, so it was horrible. And yet I was still able to visit Iraq during that time. I was still able to come and go. Now I wouldn't think, I think about it, but I haven't been back.
It's not the time.
It's really still, I mean, so not to say like that was a good situation. There's a bad, I mean, the, it's like from bad to worse, but the problem set changes, so, anyway, but this is people were sort of, there were some people that maybe naively or blindly were just wanted this Saddam gone so something else could come, but that something else ended up being worse. Or the people in Egypt, or the people here, or I don't know where, it's sort of, they're open-ended questions, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm more interested in the questions than trying to find answers, because answers can't really be trusted for very long, so...
Music from the great Amir El-Safar here at WKCR 89.9 FM New York and WKCR HD1. I am in the studio with Hans Taparia from the India Center Foundation. How are you doing, Hans?
Doing well, thank you.
Yeah, great to have you.
Thank you for having me here. This is lovely.
Yeah, and the reason we are lucky enough to have Hans in the studio with us is that that artist we just we're speaking with and listening to his music, Amir El-Safar, will be putting on a free concert this Friday, kicking off a really fascinating series called Outside India, and that will be taking place at the Rubinstein Atrium in Lincoln Center, 7:30. And these free shows happen to be sometimes tough to get into because crowds run. So we are going to give away a couple reserved seating tickets in just a little bit. So you want to stay tuned and wait for that. So on that series, we have Amir El-Safar. We have Iraqi-American jazz musician. We have Roman Diaz, incredible Afro-Cuban musician. Martha Redbone, who is of really interesting background, Native American, African American, Appalachian background. And who am I missing, Hans?
Awasango.
Awasango of Mali. Yeah, we'll check that out. So maybe just off the bat, what was the inspiration behind the series overall?
Well, maybe I'll just give you a little bit of background on the India Center Foundation and its charter. The India Center Foundation is a new institution here in New York City. We're now in about our second year of operation, and it's dedicated to the study of the Indian subcontinent, the promotion of its cultural life, and its unique relationship between India and the United States. We host dialogues, exhibitions, music programs, film festivals to promote this mission. And down the road, we may add a research component to our work and perhaps even serve as a host for bilateral discussions one day and the like. And so the idea of outside in, it's outside in is really the outside India is really the play on words of outside in. The idea behind that is to bring together what is being curated by Brooklyn Raga Massive with its mastery of Indian classical music and blending it with other traditions from outside of India. In this case, you know, Iraqi traditions or Appalachian traditions or Malian traditions or Cuban traditions. And in some ways, those outside traditions themselves are blends of something else. So it's kind of a blend within a blend, if you will. And that's really central to the mission of the India Center Foundation.
Awesome. So what did you hear in Amir El-Safar that kind of made you feel that he was an ideal match for your vision of what you're trying to get across?
I think in Amir's music, there's a lot of love. There's a lot of lost love. There's a lot of romance. There's a lot of contemplation. There is something about, there's a sense of slowing things down in some ways, meditation as well. So when you think about what he represents as an Iraqi American, you know, and bringing that into and fusing that with Indian classical music here in New York City at Lincoln Center on the Upper West Side is symbolic of something we need to do a lot more of. I mean, you know, we at the India Center Foundation feel like we all need to do our small part in helping communities, people, audiences know that as humans from different cultures, there's more that binds us than that separates us. And we think that through the centuries, when you think about art, the arts, there are really only a few scripts or stories that we have as humans. There are common threads between, say, the Greek tragedies or the Mahabharata in India or Shakespeare, or for that matter, Hamilton here in New York City. The context might be different. The geography might be different. The food or clothing might be different. But in the case of music, the technical aspects might be different, but the emotions are common. And we as a species need to recognize that, and we're trying to do our small part in making that happen. And Amir El-Safar with Brooklyn Raga Massive is the perfect way for us to demonstrate that.
Right. Well, people can see it and witness it and hear it and catch this kind of really fascinating investigation of maqam and raga, which are such interesting equivalents. And that will be this Friday at the Lincoln Center atrium. We'll give out some tickets. Right now. These are just reserve seating. And the number is 212-854-9920. That's 212-854-9920. And let's check out some music from Awasango with the Brooklyn Raga Massive. I love this.
Thank you. hagiye mirire benyoke doloyi maya e hagiye hakili godo maya e kobaye hakili godo no maya e miriye mo mirire benyoke mi benye maya e hagiye mirire benyoke
Music from Awa Sango and the Brooklyn Raga Massive. They are one of the artists being featured on this brand new and very exciting new series that will be presented at Lincoln Center. It's produced by the India Center Foundation, curated by Brooklyn Raga Massive, and presented by Lincoln Center. And the opening night is this Friday coming up, with Amir El-Safar and Arun Ramamurthy, who was the violin player on that last track, and Jay Gandhi, who was the bansuri player on that last track, also Abhik Mukherjee, one of the great sitar players in our community, will be on that show. That's 7:30 at Lincoln Center. And while I am plugging, I forgot to mention earlier that tickets for the Ragas Live Festival just went on sale two days ago or something like that. You can go to Indiegogo and search for Ragas Live Festival and get your tickets. 24 hours, over 60 musicians at the Rubin Museum of Art. That's in October 21st, 10 a.m. to 10 a.m. the next day. It's not a one-second concert. It's a 24-hour concert. It was born here at WKCR, so we'd love to see you in person. You can also go to www.igg.me.ragaslive, igg.me.ragaslive. I am joined by Hans Taparia. What'd you hear on that last track?
The seamless combination of, you know, traditions and cultures from around the world coming together. You know, that's not easy to do. It was those kinds of melodies and rhythms, soothing, that's what I would say.
Mm-hmm. And what do you feel about, like, Why now? How does a series like this fit in with the world today and now, here and now?
Yeah, you know, as I was saying earlier, we as a species, you know, we have some work to do to understand each other. And again, there's not much that separates us when you start to really think about it. There are only a few scripts that humans really have when it comes to this. And, you know, we're also a pretty new species. I mean, I would give us some time to make this work. You know, we're about 150,000 years old on a 4.5 billion year planet. We've only really been living in communities for about 10,000 years. And so, because a lot of people say, you know, by now we as humans should get this. We should understand our similarities. But we have work to do. The current global political climate suggests that. But we're also kind of young, I would say.
Yeah. It's if you look at the big view, right, yeah, agriculture only kicked in 10,000 years ago. So
now is important.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for me, we were talking off mic about the differences between the collaborations of the 1970s and late 60s when this first kind of became a thing, you know, and also some artists like Yusef Lateef were experimenting with this stuff in the 50s as well. Do you feel there's a difference in the global reception and also in the artistic qualities of stuff from what's now 40, 50 years ago and how it's being produced today?
Yeah. I think at that time, and certainly I recollect growing up in the 80s and 90s and hearing artists like Peter Gabriel and Sting, who seemed very comfortable with world music and working with the best in, with best in class musicians from all over. And it feels like today we don't have that in what you might call the popular music arena in the same way. Having said that, there's so much more going on. There's the sophistication of work and the attempt to blend traditions together is significantly more varied today as well. So there is something for everyone out there, and at least we have access to that today.
Yeah. Well, I am excited to share another act that's going to be featured, and this is the Afro-Cuban tradition. And to many, that is a stretch because if you look at the differences between the uses of these musics. On one side, you have Indian classical music, which, though born from folk music, existed as in the courts. And then you have a music that was born in the cane fields, sugarcane fields of Cuba, and was actually illegal. Even 70 years ago, because of its how African it was in nature. But then there's some interesting similarities, both spiritual traditions, both invoking in their own ways the divine. And I don't know, before we hear it, if you've heard anything of this Roman Diaz or Raga Cubana that made you think that this was a go for the series?
I had not been exposed prior to being introduced to it through Brooklyn Raga Massive and the curation that you had done.
Yeah.
But upon listening to it, it just made a lot of sense once more. I mean, and also, you know, when we bring the four together, when you think about the four artists together, blues Appalachian, Cuban, again, which derives so much of its tradition from West Africa, thinking about West Africa itself and sort of the juxtaposition between something Malian and Cuban, that connection. And then, of course, with a Middle Eastern Arabic sensibility as well, it just sort of all seemed to blend well together in terms of the portfolio as well.
Great. Well, let's take a listen. This is a Dune, which a folk song, And that was a good match since Afro-Cuban tradition. Dunes are often in a time signature tal of six beats cycle, and there's also a huge amount of Afro-Cuban music in 6/8. So here we'll hear Roman Diaz and the group Raga Cubana. Enjoy.
Thank you. Raga Cubana.
There's an excerpt, intentionally or unintentionally, of a concert from Brooklyn Raga Massive. You can hear the whole thing, Brooklyn Raga Massive, with Roman Diaz, the Afro-Cuban maestro, with Melvis Santa there on vocals, Jay Gandhi on flute, myself on guitar, David Ellenbogen, Michael Gam on bass, Clemente Medina on bata drums, Folosona Arunsula on bata as well. We had Camila Salin on guitar there, and Aaron Hansen on tabla. Did I say Arun Ramamurthy on violin? He was there. Jay Gandhi were there. Both Arun and Jay will be playing this Friday on the start of the Outside India series. We hope to see you there at Lincoln Center. Free show. And all the music you've heard, every single thing, save that first 10 minutes or so, that's all available at the NYC Radio Live podcast. So you can hear the full, complete concert. You just look up Raga Cubana of that last track, or you could look up Awa Sango. Awa, A-W-A, Sango is S-A-N-G-H-O. Awa Sango, you can go to that same website. You can hear the complete conversation with Amir El-Safar there as well. So that's nycradiolive.org. I know that some radio listeners are very resistant to computers and podcasts in particular. So that's all right. You can always tune here 7 to 9 p.m. I'll be back at 11 p.m. as well. So I am joined here by Hans Taparia. Are you getting excited for the festival?
Oh, yeah. Just warmed up.
Great series, yeah. Thanks for putting it together, making it happen. I was curious, you know, it seems like part of your broader mission is, maybe I'm wrong, but some kind of redefinition or investigation of being Indian, but not in India, but in America. You know, is that part of, am I on the right track? Is that part of what's going on?
Partly.
Okay.
Partly. It is... You know, this is, of course, a country which has been a melting pot for people from everywhere. Here in New York City, we speak over 200 languages. So this is partly about identity, but it's also partly about what it means to bring Indian culture, Indian music, Indian dance, Indian arts, and blend those with what is quintessentially New York or American, which is itself a blend of many things. And so I like to think of this, again, as a blend within a blend, as opposed to highlighting what it means to be Indian in America, per se.
Right. So, yeah, and what brought you to this work and, you know, what...
You know, we are a board, a founding board of five individuals, and today we have a board of nine people at the India Center Foundation. And we felt that there was a gap in the U.S. and here in New York City. There wasn't, in our view, an institution that was focused on the study of India and its broader relationship with the U.S. That was beyond the mission of a few individuals. It was there wasn't an institution that we felt was had been set up to stand the test of time and support this and not be about any one of us, but be about this particular mission. There are institutions for many other communities, but we felt that there really wasn't one that we could think of that was serving this purpose in New York City or in the U.S.
All right. Well, we're glad for your work. Let's check out another track. This is the finale of the Awa Sango performance. And this is actually available on a video. You folks can search for it. And this is just some smoking music. And Awa's introduction, she mentions that she is an activist, like actually many of the performers on the Outside India series. And this is called Nanga Rabha, which means the little girl. And she's an activist, particularly for women's rights and children's rights. And I believe the lyrics are kind of telling you that when it's time to play, play, and when it's time to work, work. So here is Nanga Rabha, the little girl.
Kelen filanto nangaraba muso bina kolam mona pitiri da fabora Kelen filanto nangaraba muso bina kolam mona pitiri da fabora Bina kolongono pitiri da babora Eba 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 Thank you.
Mama Sango, the golden voice of Mali.
Thank you.
Namu.
That was the voice of Danielle Moreno, the incredible percussionist and husband of Awa Sango, stepfather to Malik Kony, the drummer, who is Awa's son there. And the Brooklyn Raga Massive playing there with Awa Sango. And once again, Outside India series starts this Friday, 7:30 at Lincoln Center Atrium. We might be able to give out some more tickets later in the broadcast for reserve seating. And that track you just heard of, you can dig up on the NYC Radio Live podcast. You look up Awa Sango. And I'm here with Hans Taparia from the India Center Foundation. They are the ones who dreamed up this awesome series, which has Amir El Safar. It has Martha Redbone, who we're going to listen to at the end of the show. It has Awa Sango, and it also has Roman Diaz, all free shows. And it's all these artists working with the Brooklyn Raga Massive. So I was just kind of curious, Hans, why you chose the Brooklyn Raga Massive to kind of curate and produce this festival?
You know, many reasons. I mean, certainly, first and foremost, such a lovable group of individuals. But I think Brooklyn Raga Massive is the perfect group to curate and perform in the series because it's really the kind of thing that epitomizes what Brooklyn Raga Massive stands for. You know, there have been many Indian artists over the years that have worked with musicians from other traditions, such as Shakti. We were talking about Shakti before, led by master percussionist Zakir Hussain, which had great success. But I would venture to say that no one has attempted to work with the breadth of artists and traditions the way Brooklyn Raga Massive has done and will continue to build on in the years to come. And I think that has something to do with the individuals that make up Brooklyn Raga Massive, people like yourself, David, who have a mastery of both Indian and Western traditions, African traditions. And it also has to do with being part of and eager to fully embrace a uniquely dynamic scene here in New York City and Brooklyn. And, you know, of course, we were talking about New York City, a place that speaks over 200 languages, a city that invented tap dancing by bringing together Irish and African tribal traditions nearly 200 years ago. So I think Brooklyn Raga Massive is actually onto something quite big and longer term could result in the creation of altogether new genres of music.
Yeah, well, it does seem like it's happening. I will say for the record that thank you for your kind words. I don't consider myself a master of anything. In fact, I usually don't know where my shoes are. But thanks for those kind words. Yeah, and I didn't know that about tap dancing. That's interesting. Yeah, so.
Yeah, new genres. I mean, and I think you've got a uniquely Brooklyn sound at one level, which itself could be a genre.
Yeah, yeah. No, the creation of new forms, it feels like something real is happening. And one thing I think that is that the WKCR audience has been part of that because we've been broadcasting the experimentations of the Brooklyn Raga Massive and the musicians in that scene for going on 6 years now. Many of those are documented on that podcast, the NYC Radio Live, that I constantly plug. And there are also tons of them at the Ragas Live Festival, which is October 21st. If you're just tuning in, you might have heard, you may not have heard me shamelessly plugging that ticket sales have just begun on Indiegogo. It will sell out because, well, statistically, everything I've done at Ruby Museum has sold out. So there's a good chance it will sell out. I would love it if you get your tickets because the KCR audience were there from the beginning. So you can go to Indiegogo and search for Raga's Live Festival or go to www.igg.me.ragaslive. And there's all kinds of fun perks, posters, and original vinyls and things you can get along with your ticket. So there is one more artist we've not heard from, but I actually feel like we should hold out because she's so different from all the others. Let's hear another Raga Cubana collaboration, and this is another Dune, but different energy on this one. This is live at Pioneer Works, which was an incredible series. Talk about ambitious! The Brooklyn Raga Massive put on a different show every single Wednesday for 2 months. And or 3 months maybe, and each one was so ambitious. It was like George Harrison tribute, and then the next week it would be Ravi Shankar tribute, and it was really exciting, and it gave birth to all these different groups. And we're lucky enough that Samir Gupta was able to mix these multi-track recordings into what I think are CD quality. So here is Raga Cubana returning. And if you want to make sure you get in, the number is 212-854-9920. That's 212-854-9920 if you want to make sure you get in this Friday at Lincoln Center Atrium. Otherwise, just show up early and you will be fine. Like 15 minutes, 20 minutes early, you should be fine. So here is more from Roman Diaz and Brooklyn Raga Massive. All right, ladies and gentlemen, are you getting excited for the India Center Foundation's incredible Outside India Festival? I am. You feeling it, Hans?
Oh, yeah.
Good. Thanks for coming. Thanks for getting it all together. The opening night, as we said, is this Friday at the David Rubenstein Atrium. You know you made it when there's an atrium named after you. That is at Lincoln Center, 7:30. Come early to make sure you get in. That'll be Amir El-Safar with the Brooklyn Raga Massive. Any last thoughts, Hans?
In case you're booking your calendar out further, the four concerts, September 8th, November 10th, February 9th, April 13th, are the four dates. The Rubenstein Atrium Museum, the Rubenstein Atrium location, an incredible venue. It's got an ambiance that is suited to formal sit-down concerts, but also has this wonderful casual feel, a bar, high ceilings, lots of windows. There's going to be a social hour as well afterwards, just so that individuals, everybody who comes can, you know, meet each other, discuss the music, and bask in the mood that would have been created by it. So, again, September 8th, November 10th, February 9th, and April 13th.
All right, and we will see you here. We're going to take it out with some Martha Redbone, who will be on the festival as well. And thanks for listening. I'll be back at 11, folks. Don't touch that dial.
Joys and